The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome on back, Easter weekend, and another Saturday night with your pumped up purveyor of principled, passionate patriotism. Randy Corcoran here at 303-696-1971. The show where we continue to be unafraid of the washed up Republican liars, the sadly unprincipled, misguided pontificators who continue to tell you untruths over and over and over. Because, you know, a lie that's repeated often enough becomes true for some people. And we're going to disabuse some folks of some inaccurate notions as the show goes on. But just as I was coming on air, I got a text from a family member that said, "We went to our church for an Easter egg hunt today, and the eggs were all empty. And our son was so mad about it, he kept angry opening each egg and dropping it on the ground. What in the world?" Now, I understand the reason for the season. I understand why Easter is important to me and likely to you and so many billions of people around the country. But it's also a fun time for little kids. We're talking a three-year-old. Who in the world sets up an Easter hunt with empty plastic eggs? I just don't get it. Can you not put maybe a Hershey's, what are those things called? A Hershey's, not a twist, but, well, you know what I'm talking about. A Hershey Kiss. Yeah, rhymes with twist. There you go. By the way, Luis Gonzalez is here tonight. John was unable to make it in to do the show, and it's just great to work with you again, Luis. Looks like you've done some great work getting things ready tonight. I do appreciate it, sir. Lewis is a joy. Coming up on the show in about 15 minutes or so, we will be joined by Laurel Eimer, who is competing, running in a three-way race to become the next Republican National Committeewoman. And current Committeewoman Vera Ortegon, I've been working with for my last 4 years, almost 4 years now. It's a four-year term. And then Christy Rodriguez, I think, is her last name, the three people that are vying for the seat. And it's very interesting because when I ran, there were five people running. And, man, I was so worried because I was clearly the most conservative person in that race. You know, Tea Party chair, talk radio host, out and about, rallies at ICE rallies, downtown rallies for the Second Amendment, battles for businesses to stay open, all of those kinds of things. Nobody else on that ballot could really lay claim to the level of activism that I was involved with or really touch, you know, my conservative cred. But there were some other good conservatives on that ballot, and I was really worried that the conservative side of that ballot was going to split the vote and allow another, you know, sort of long-term establishment, maybe Bush-style, Dick Wadhams-favored kind of Republican. And fortunately, it didn't work out that way. I cleared the field with more votes than my next two competitors combined. I wonder how it's going to go this time. Now, I am running for re-election. I finally made that decision a couple of weeks ago and announced it here, and apparently don't have a challenger, so I think it's likely that I will win. But the national committee man race is, or committee woman race is going to be very, very interesting. And Laurel Eimer is someone I've known a long time outside of politics, and you know, her family is just the kind of people that show up. And when my family got COVID, they were bringing food to my kids at the different house, and I couldn't get out because my wife and I had COVID. And just stepping up when my beloved wife died last June, I couldn't get them off my back. You know, they wanted me to eat. They wanted me to get out. They this and they that. And, you know, a lot of times I just had to say, no, I just need to be left alone. But the thought and the persistence and all of that has been great. But beyond that personal connection, she's now received the endorsement of Turning Point Action, of Tea Party Patriots, my friend Jenny Beth Martin. I am so proud to be working with and also endorsed, by the way, by Turning Point Action and Tea Party Patriots. That was kind of a given, I think, for me, especially since I'm the only one in the race now. But she's just a solid conservative, battle-tested, has run for office a couple times, taken the slings, powerful speaker, and has worked so hard showing up at RNC meetings over the last, year or more. At her own, well, for any committee person, it's at your own expense. You pay your way. But she's been doing it just to learn, just to get connected, just to be a part of that. So anyway, I endorsed her myself. So it seems only fitting to have her on the air as we hit the 1 week before Election Day point, and she will join us around 5:25. 6 o'clock, my good friend Joel Gilbert, filmmaker, musician. If you go to Wikipedia, conspiracy theorist. He's just terrific. His movie, The Trayvon Hoax, we've talked about so many times, proved that the efforts to take down the assailant, the man who was defending himself against Trayvon Martin, were phony. Dreams from My Real Father, taking a look at the actual likely birth history of Barack Hussein Obama. And for all you folks just shaking your head, there he goes again. Just want you to do one thing. Go to whatever your search engine is. Even Google will give you the pictures. Pull up Barack Hussein Obama, former president. Pull up Barack Hussein Obama, or maybe it's just Barack Obama, the alleged father of Barack Hussein Obama, and pull up Frank Marshall Davis. And look at those pictures. And tell me that Barack Hussein Obama isn't the spitting image of the person I believe to be his biological father, certainly had sex with his mother, nude photos of her in his house. I mean, it's just unbelievable stuff you can still easily find out there. So he put that one out. He takes a lot of flack for those kinds of things, but he is the man who did the documentary Michelle Obama 2024. And I've been predicting now for over a year, in large part because of the work I was doing with Joel Gilbert and the conversations and the watching of his documentary. And we did some things here in Colorado together where I got to really explore his thinking about this. And he has promoted the idea and continues to believe, as do I, that Joe, creepy, sleepy, showered with his daughter, Joe Biden, will not be the Democrat nominee. And he's going to make that case again with us, I am guessing sometime around the 6 o'clock hour. And then, you know, we usually don't do guests on this show anymore. Phone lines have been so busy, and I just like to hear from you and talk things through. But because of the attacks on my good friend and co-counsel, Professor John Eastman, and some misrepresentations that were stated about him even earlier today, and the fact that a California judge, and I think 160-plus page ruling, is recommending that he be disbarred, we're going to try to squeeze John Eastman in between flights tonight. And he's going to text me as soon as he hits the ground and has hopefully 10 to 15 minutes before a connection flight he's got to make. I expect to have Professor John Eastman on sometime tonight around 7 or 7:05. So that's the layout for the show. And of course, your calls are always welcome. 303-696-1971. 303-696-1971. You will, of course, be thrilled, absolutely thrilled, as our unifying president, putative president, creepy, sleepy Joe, thinking really about tradition and religion, and of course, his own Catholicism. The Easter holiday coming up tomorrow, its significance to so many people, not only in this country, but around the world, chose tomorrow, Easter Sunday, to proclaim Transgender Visibility Day. Transgender Visibility Day. So on Easter Sunday, 365 days in a year, any day to continue to promote the society-killing efforts of prioritizing gender dysphoria and people who are living a transgender life over every other value, every other need of this country, issued this proclamation. I think it was just this morning, about 8 or 9 hours ago. I didn't see it till a couple of hours ago. But here's what it says. It's very short. Now, therefore, I, Joseph R. Biden Jr., putative president. Oh, wait. No, I added the putative. Sorry. Now, therefore, I, Joseph R. Biden Jr., president of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby proclaim March 31st, 2024, as Transgender Day of Visibility. Now, you and I don't care what people want to do with their body parts. You and I don't care what people, how people want to dress. You and I don't care if people find happiness or believe that they've found themselves by living their lives in a manner different from their biological sex organs and their original body parts. We just don't care. From my perspective, I feel troubled for people like that. It used to be a psychiatric, a diagnosable condition, gender dysphoria, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to be in one body and have your brain tell you that you are something that you simply, clearly, biologically are not. But it's not something to be condemned or mocked or any of the things that the people on the left do to us for even talking about it or calling it out. What we object to is having it shoved down our throats, having it shoved down our children's throats, having our children's body parts and hormones messed with, causing permanent damage, empowering children as young as 5 years old to make these life-altering decisions, and starting the drug regimens and the surgical regimens in, early teens, if not before. And the agenda, just the agenda. The drag queen, reading hour and just the remarkable amount of injuries that we've seen from biological men competing in women's sports. Women who've been, had their brain rattled, who've had serious physical injuries. And forget about the ones who've been injured, and please don't, but setting them aside, the women who've worked their lives on a sport, the championship swimmers, the championship volleyball players, the runners, and have utilized, every waking minute almost of their lives in pursuit of this goal because they have a remarkable talent and remarkable self-discipline. And all of a sudden, just within the last, 2, 3, 4 years, it has become permissible for human beings with all the physical characteristics of a man, including greater strength, different bone structure, hormones that operate their body differently, who clearly, scientifically, objectively have a significant physical advantage, are allowed to jump into these women's sports at almost every level, high school, college, professional, semi-pro, and dominate those professions and sometimes injure their opponents. Basketball, there's some tremendous injuries on basketball courts now in women's basketball with biological males who identify, that's the new term now, identify as women, getting in there and just knocking the stuffing out of them. That's what we care about. Not what individuals need to do to feel good about themselves or feel complete or whatever. Doesn't seem to work out very well. The statistics aren't good. But regardless, free country, do what you want. but we've allowed it to cross over into chaotic, society-damaging behavior that's not only promoted, but you are criticized, you are a bigot, you are a horrible human being if you simply talk about it. And so on Easter, we get from Joe Biden this proclamation of the Transgender Day of Visibility. I'll wrap this up. We'll take a break and be joined by Laurel Eimer here in just a moment. He continued, I call upon all Americans to join us in lifting up the lives and voices of transgender people throughout our nation and to work toward eliminating violence and discrimination based on gender identity. In witness whereof, I have hereunto set my hand this 29th day of March in the year of our Lord, 2024, and of the independence of the United States of America, the 248th. I have to read that again to have it make sense. And there's one thing that I found. Let me see if I've got access to it here real quick before we take our break. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take the break now so we can pick up Laurel on the other side. I want to draw a contrast between what Biden said and what the reality is of what all the transgenderism is doing to and who is committing the acts of violence, really, here in the United States of America. So I hope you'll stay with us. It's 521. I'm Randy Corcoran, 710 KNUS. An interesting bit of bumper music for Easter weekend. That was Black Sabbath back in 1971. And I know, you know, a lot of folks look at Black Sabbath, devil worship, and Ozzy, and all of that. I was reading about this song a little bit, and it is considered perhaps the first hard rock song about Easter. And it talks about, you know, what would people think if they knew that you believed in God above? Anyway, we're going to play around with the Easter theme on our bumper music tonight. And I'll get back to my conversation about the transgenderism and the president's proclamation today, the putative president's proclamation today, PPP, putative president's proclamation. Yeah, I like that. But right now, I want to check in with Laurel Eimer, and boy, phone lines are loading up to 303-696-1971. But Laurel, welcome to the show.
See, how are you today?
I am hanging in. How are you? Because I remember what that last week was like before an election for national committee person, and I'll tell you what, it's a busy time.
Well, especially today because we had our Jefferson County Assembly today, 1 week ahead of the State Assembly. And so I've been there at the Jeffco Assembly since 7:30 this morning. I just walked in the door 5 minutes ago, and now I'm on the radio with you.
Wow. Why did it take so long, a county assembly? What all did they have to do?
I am also a notary, and so I was notarizing all of our candidate affidavits for all of the candidates that won through the assembly process today.
Interesting. So what else was done at Jefferson County today?
Well, you know, it was a well-run assembly. There was not a lot of hoopla. We went through our resolutions and our first judicial district assembly and then our various house district assemblies today, as well as multi-county district assemblies for some of our districts that are a mix of Adams and Jefferson County. So, I mean, all told, we had a very busy day. And then I notarized documents for 6, 7, 8 different candidates that went through the assembly process today, multiple copies of each. So that took about 2 hours at the end of our day.
I am running apparently without opposition, so it's kind of an easy week for me. But what was it like for you? Were any of your competitors there at Jeffco today?
I did have one come in today. She showed up late in the afternoon, so she only got to address a small member of the body because most of people were dispersed into their other meetings at that time, and that was all that she did today. So you know, it was fine. It's my home turf, and I have great support in Jefferson County because I'm a fourth generation Colorado native, and my family's been in Jefferson County for almost 68 years. So I know my community, knows me, and they know that they can place their trust in me to lead them with dignity and integrity at the RNC.
Talking with Laurel Eimer, candidate for Republican National Committee Woman, that election coming up next Saturday. In fact, I won't be here next Saturday because I have to be down there in Pueblo as well. I know what the last week was like for me when I was running. I had four competitors. There were five of us on the ballot. How will you spend this next week, this final week before the convention?
Well, I work Monday through Friday full time, so I'll be working. And then outside of working hours, I'll be making as many phone calls and meeting with as many people and many delegates as we can. I've got a great team of volunteers that will help to make those calls as well, because clearly I can't make all of them by myself in such a short amount of time. We won't even get the delegate list from some of the counties that had their assemblies today until tomorrow or maybe even Monday of this week. So it is a really tight time crunch to get that final delegate list. So, you know, it's just going to be, we're really just hopeful that the front legwork that we've done is going to help bring us through so that it will counteract anything that we're unable to achieve in just a short amount of time this week. But it's going to be all hands on deck, the phone lines ringing and dedicating everything that we have, because we are going to fight to the very last minute, to the very last second of my speech on the floor. We intend to win this thing, and that's what we're going to do, Randy.
Well, that's fantastic, and I have come out publicly and endorsed you. I was really happy to see that you earned the endorsement from my friend Jenny Beth Martin and Tea Party Patriots. I was not involved in that at all. How did you pull that one off?
Well, I met with Jenny Beth when I was out for the meeting in Las Vegas with Turning Point. I met with her that week. We had a brief meeting and discussed, you know, the possibility of an endorsement, and introduced myself. We had a great conversation, and then just have been following up on that over the last couple of weeks. And it just worked out, the timing of it, to come out this week, which was just fabulous. And I'm really honored to have received that. She's a fabulous lady. You know, she was named one of the top 100 most influential women by Time Magazine about 10 years ago. So she's a fantastic lady. Happy to call her a friend.
Yeah, she is remarkable. I've spent many long conversations in different parts of the country with her. And, you know, back in the early days, we were together for a speech on the west steps of the Capitol on the 10th anniversary of the beginning of the Tea Party. And she's the co-founder of Tea Party Patriots some, gosh, 14, 15 years ago now. And I respect her just so much. She never backs down. She lives in Georgia, so she's been in the middle of so much of the election nonsense and the craziness going on like that. And I certainly remember the last week for me, and it was an awful lot of phone calls. And so
yeah, we have additional things. We're not just going to be doing phone calls. We have numerous other outreach avenues that we'll be using as well. And you're talking about the Tea Party going back 15 years. I was on the ground at the beginning of the Tea Party as well, with Tom Tancredo, who I am also endorsed by, former Congressman Tom Tancredo. And I remember attending the Tea Party meetings that we held here in Golden at the VFW, and my son was 4 years old at the time, and he used to sing the national anthem for us at the Tea Party meetings. And so I go back in that movement as long as you do, Randy.
And you spent a lot of time at the Arapaho Tea Party, the Tea Party that I chair, which I have been grateful for, especially after my wife died, when I was not able to do meetings for several months. And you know, I don't know if you heard my opening monologue, but I did talk about you a little bit. And just, you know, one of the reasons it was so easy for me in a race that I, you know, could have easily just stayed neutral in, throw my support behind you. When Turning Point Action selected you, that was huge for me, because I think they're the most important activist organization in the country because of their focus on youth. I had already endorsed you by the time Tea Party Patriots came along, but it just sort of reaffirmed my situation, my decision and my belief about why you were the right person for this job. But I also talked just a little bit about what kind of a person you are and how you stood up for me and my family during COVID, and did your best, even though I know I was just wasn't very approachable, didn't really want to talk to anybody. But you and your family were always there for me, and that says a lot about you. And then you're fighting your tail off for a job that pays absolutely nothing and costs a fortune to perform on behalf of the values that you and I believe in and stand for. So, you know, I do admire that, and I will certainly have some words to say on your behalf come next Saturday. And I hope we wind up tag-teaming this thing as we go into the next 4 years on the RNC.
Well, I do too, you know, and I have, I mean, it's just an honor to call you a friend, and I appreciate your support so very much. And I mean, people are important to me, all people in my life, and relationships matter. And it's important, especially when we're in politics, because, I mean, we get just brutalized, right? And, I mean, I call them frenemies. You have friends in politics who are your friends and your enemies on the same day sometimes, right? And so it's really important to build lasting relationships and be able to have people in your corner that you can trust and that trust you. It means a lot. And, you know, if you look at my list of endorsements outside of those two large organizations, I've got 33 endorsements on my website right now at imurfforcolorado.com. It is all walks of life, all types of people from all different aspects in Colorado, current leaders, previous leaders, youth, other organizations such as the Gays Against Groomers. I know you were talking about the proclamation that the resident of the White House has put out. And I'd like to change that. I think we should change the language of that. And I think that that proclamation should actually read that I call upon all Americans to join us in lifting up the lives of the people of faith throughout the nation and to work towards eliminating violence and discrimination based on religious discrimination. Why don't we do that kind of a proclamation instead? I think that would be more effective for this country.
That's a beautiful, beautiful suggestion. And for that, this to come out, for this to come out on Easter weekend is just another example of them in your face. These people hate you and they don't mind that you know it. And they're so convinced with all of their machinations and their lawfare and the amazing amounts of money that they're able to put together that they've got this baby sewed up. And I'm not so sure about that. I think this is a fight worth having that we are poised, well poised to win. But yeah, just a tremendous idea. Now, when I was running for committee man, we did things like debates. We had these debates and it was very, very interesting because I think I had an advantage because I was involved in, you know, the COVID litigations and election fraud stuff, was talking very freely and openly about that. But did you have the opportunity to debate with any of your opponents or do any town halls or anything like that?
Well, we actually had, technically two official debates. One was a private debate that was done with a group of, Jefferson County House District chairs. And that was at Jefferson County, GOP headquarters. And that's actually available. You can view that online at the Jefferson County GOP Facebook page. And then we had a debate that we did with Sharona Bishop, America's Mom, and you can find that on her podcast as well. And then there was another supposed debate that was held in Evergreen by the Mountain Republicans, but two of the candidates, myself and our current committee woman, were unavailable for that debate. They went ahead and held the debate anyway and then put out in their literature that they were hosting a debate. And then they went on to say that they had a debate, but oh, look, only one candidate showed up. And they held a single individual debate and declared that individual the winner. And I just don't think that that's the proper term, debate, when you're debating with yourself. So that's the kind of shenanigans that's going on that. But if you want to see those actual debates, you can find those on Sharona Bishop's information and then at Jefferson County GOP as well.
Yeah, it gets nasty this time of year, and it's exhausting. But it is worth it. The RNC is headed the right direction. Probably it would have been easier for me to stay neutral in this race had Vera Ortegon, the current national committee woman, someone who I like. We share the loss of a spouse in very similar circumstances, all kinds of things. But she voted for Ronna McDaniel. And I didn't hear from one constituent in Colorado. I heard from thousands of people around the country. The most emails, texts, calls, and contacts that I've had on any particular issue that the RNC was dealing with that all said no more Ronna McDaniel. And that just you gotta, you know, no matter how much you know, how well connected you are, you have to listen to the people that put you in office.
Well, that's right. I mean, we're responsible and accountable to the constituents that put us there. And I mean, that's the reason that I got in the race for two reasons, right? I got in the race, one, to replace Ronna McDaniel. Now that has satisfied itself already with the election that has happened a couple of weeks ago with Whatley and Laura Trump. That's taken care of itself. But the other reason I got in the race is because there was a clear line drawn in the sand between our current committee woman and myself at the most recent state assembly when we were talking about the open primary. And I am proud to be a candidate that was signed on in that original lawsuit with John Eastman to overturn our unconstitutional open primary law here in Colorado. And our current committeewoman does not support the overturning of the open primary. And I do. And that line was drawn in the sand for me. And that was the moment that I made the decision that I was going to run, because we have to stand for that. It's the absolute bare bones of election integrity, our open primary. It is dangerous. It's unconstitutional, and it must be overturned. And now, as we move forward into the 2024 ballot, we are going to be facing ranked choice voting. So, I mean, there's a lot of issues coming down the pipe that we've got to deal with. And I know you're going to have John Eastman on, hopefully, here in the next hour or two. And, he's got tons and tons of support here in Colorado. And I just hope that he wins this pushback against getting disbarred. It's just crazy.
Well, and of course, I had to tune into our station today because I found out that when I found out what happened to John, I knew that would be a topic of conversation. And Dick Wadhams came on. Not only were there absolute lies told about John Eastman, but Dick Wadhams came on and told the audience that we had had a 3 or 4 day trial, a trial in which he testified, and that the judge had determined that there was no case, no evidence, and that the case was over. And this is the same day where I got to cross-examine Dick Wadhams. And then when he left, as he walked around to the elevator, pushed the button, but out of sight where I couldn't see him, actually yelled at me, "Go to hell, Randy." And so just for people who have any question about it, the case is not over. That was a preliminary injunction. It's a very short, it was a 2 day hearing, but it's a very short amount of time to gather evidence, make your case, and a very extraordinary remedy that we were asking for. But this case continues. Our full blown trial with experts and everything else will be in 2025. And so it's not over. I just cannot allow the misinformation to go on unchallenged. But I appreciate that you were on our side for that. And most Republicans in Colorado are, at least the ones who matter, the ones who are voting next week at the assembly. Well, we're flat out of time, Laurel. Any last comments you'd like to give to our listeners?
I want to give a shout out to Bellator Defense. They provided security for me today at the state assembly, and I just want to shout out to them. So thankful for their help in keeping everybody safe there today. And then, again, direct people to our website, imerforcolorado.com, where you can see those endorsements. You can see my platform. Please reach out to me. If you're a state assembly delegate, I'd be honored to earn your vote. You can go on our website. You can pledge your support to me now, which helps to eliminate that extra phone call I have to make this week. And I just want to tell everybody, you know, be blessed this weekend. Resurrection Sunday is coming. And a suggestion for you and your music is Don Francisco, He's Alive. It's the greatest gospel song ever written about Easter. He's a personal friend of mine from Colorado. Don Francisco, He's Alive. You need to play it.
Fantastic. Laurel Imer, I will see you next Friday and Saturday. Good luck in this last stretch week. And we always appreciate your time here on 710 KNUS.
Thank you, Randy.
God bless. All right, we're going to go straight to break. Our phone number, 303-696-1971. Hope to be joined by Joel Gilbert around 6, and we're going to try and squeeze in John Eastman between flights right around 7 o'clock tonight. Rest of our time is for you. 303-696-1971. Right back on 710 KNUS. Simple Minds from 1984, East of Easter. And I really did think about doing gospel songs. Laurel Imer just recommended a great one a couple minutes ago. But what I was doing this morning, and it was dog early, so maybe I wasn't really thinking clearly, but I wanted to see what the culture considered to be great songs for Easter. And one of the things that I learned when I looked at these different top 9, top 12, top 20 rock songs, not just any songs, but rock and roll songs at Easter, is that so many of them are kind of a mockery, actually, of Christianity. Or they don't have any really connection to the resurrection, that Jesus was risen, and, you know, any of that sort of thing. And so, but I did find some music that I liked and was pretty. We're going to have some Jesus Christ Superstar. I'll tell you a couple of stories about that in the next hour, which is something that's very powerful for me. But, you know, that Black Sabbath song that we played at the very beginning from 1971, had lyrics that were just incredible. I think it was true. It was people like you that crucified Christ. I think it is sad the opinion you had was the only one voiced. Will you be so sure when your day is near? Say you don't believe. You had the chance, but you turned it down. Now you can't retrieve. Perhaps you'll think before you say that God is dead and gone. Open your eyes. Just realize that He is the one, the only one who can save you now from all the sin and hate. Or will you still jeer at all you hear? Yes, I think it's too late. No one would have expected lyrics like that from Black Sabbath, but considered perhaps one of the first Christian rock songs. And I thought that was pretty darn cool. So let's see. We've got callers on the line. Tons of texts in here. Let's see who's first. Our old buddy, Jack in Wyoming, at the top of the list. Jack, welcome.
Randy, the reason I called is when I started listening to your show, you were talking about the Barack Obama and Frank Marshall Davis, and I think the evidence that you talked about is absolutely, we can't say it's certain, but I think it's very prevalent. But the reason I want to tell you this is because in Argentina, if we were as smart as Argentina was, they do not allow illegitimates to become raised to the presidency. They can't run for the office. It's not allowed down there. And the best case in point, and your listeners have probably heard Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, and Evita. Well, it wasn't Evita in the beginning. It was Eve Duarte. And she was the illegitimate daughter of a wealthy farmer, which is called a campo down there. But anyway, and her mother was a field worker. And she had empathy for the field workers. And she got herself positioned in Buenos Aires as a radio talk personality, similar to yourself. And she pitched to what they called the shirtless ones in the field and to get to raise up the socialism and that aspect of it. And they just fell in love with her. But she couldn't run for presidency. She couldn't do it because she was illegitimate. So in the end, she teamed up with Juan Perón, who was an army officer, and he became president. But she could never hold the office because she wasn't legitimate. If we had that same sense in this country, can you imagine all the damage that Barack Obama has done to this country could have been avoided just basically if we had that rule? That's all I have, man.
Well, I want you to know, Jack, that your term last week on this show has really caught on. I heard it back from several people who were listening last week. Degenocrats, I think, is going to stick.
Oh, I hope it does. And I don't even remember the stuff I say. But this stuff I gave you about Argentina,
yeah,
this is stuff
fascinating.
I read 40 years ago. I mean, I read every book there was on Argentina 40 years ago. I mean, I could talk for hours on Argentina. And right now they have a person down there that's reversed all that. And it started with the field workers. They call them the shirtless ones. And I think in Spanish it was called the decamisetos or something like that. But she was the head of that whole movement. But she wasn't eligible to run for presidency. I mean, isn't that interesting?
Fascinating. Truly it is. And I hope you have a very blessed Easter weekend, my friend.
Okay, man. Carry on.
Take care. Let's get to David in Thornton. David, welcome.
I get confused. You know, I heard Peter this morning saying that how many people hated Trump and how many people hated Biden. And I said to myself, you know, I look out and when Trump is out talking to people, there's tens of thousands of people out there. And they're all yelling, Trump, Trump, Trump. And I said, are those Trump haters?
Yeah, no, but nobody in my lifetime has turned out popular support the way Donald Trump has. The boat rallies, the car rallies, the in-person rallies, the thousands of people that line up outside. It's just another false narrative that the corrupt, coordinated, Democrat-controlled media machine and the weak-kneed, soft-spined Republicans and the people with no principles at all that just kind of go the way the wind blows. It's just something else they need to try and put out there to make an argument against voting for Donald Trump. But, you know, before he became a politician, he was incredibly popular on both sides of the political spectrum because of all the wonderful things he does, because of his success, because he talked positively about our country. And, you know, set aside whatever personal failings you want to focus in on. Don't talk to me about that when you voted for, you know, Bill Clinton or creepy, sleepy, showered with daughter Joe Biden or anybody else like that. It's just a false narrative from people who I think they're really sort of struggling because their relevance is diminishing as time goes on. And so they have to play nasty. So be it. We'll see what happens in November.
Well, you know, the other thing, I turned around and I said, you know, when you're talking hate, I said there is hate of cops, hate of Jews, hate of Christians, hate of white men. And first and the last thing that and it just bothers the hell out of me, hate of America.
Yeah.
And I said, you want to talk hate? There's all that hate right there. Five of them.
Yeah.
Five
and it comes
hates.
And it comes from one side of the political spectrum. And
I agree.
And yet people
I agree. One side.
People who claim that they're on the side of, you know, more freedom, more security, more prosperity are so focused with their butthurt over Donald Trump and the fact that they've been proven wrong so many times, or the fact that, you know, people like me won't back down as more and more evidence comes out about the stolen election and on and on and on, that they just can't get past their own self-importance and their, you know, moral righteousness, I guess, to even if they hate both people. Earlier caller talked to, or it was with Mike Boyle on the crossover, talked about the dual haters or double haters or whatever that term was. But all you got to do is look at the United States of America under Trump, the United States of America under 3+ years of creepy, sleepy Joe. And if that doesn't make a decision for you, then you've got your head somewhere where the sun don't shine.
Well, I totally agree with you, but it just... You know, the next Marine, you know, I just look at this country right now, you know, of course, I got out of the Marine Corps in 1962, which is many, many years ago, but I just see so many changes in this country, and it just bothers the heck out of me, you know, as an 85-year-old man here, you know, looking back, and I said, I remember the days when you didn't have to lock your front door, you know?
Yeah.
And well, I lived over on the corner of 14th and Mariposa, right on the corner of 14th and Mariposa, across the project house in there. And we never locked our doors,
yeah.
You know? Night and day, we left, you know, we could leave home and go to church and leave the doors unlocked, you know? You didn't worry about those kind of somebody breaking in your house. Now you lock your doors and it's still not safe, you know? So.
Dave, I recognize your voice as a regular caller to 710. I did not know you were a Marine, so thank you very much for your service. And the lack of recruitment to our military, there's just so many different facets of the efforts to tear this country down and remake it in the image of, you know, Barack Obama and others. And Dave, we're out of time. The music is here, but I really appreciate the call. God bless and happy Easter to you, sir. All right, that's it. Filmmaker, documentarian, my friend Joel Gilbert. He joins us at 6 o'clock, so I hope you'll stay right there on 710 KNUS.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.